Thank you for joining us again for another informative episode of Satellite Nation. Satellite Nation is a weekly call-in show geared towards the hobby side of all things television. Brought to you by Satellite Guys Radio. Now here are your hosts, Michael and Brian.
Good evening, Satellite Nation. This is Brian Gohl, a.k.a. Titanium Satellite.
And I'm Michael Graves. K-E-4-E-S-T. Good evening, Satellite Nation. This week on Satellite Nation, we're going to round out everything with AmateurLogic.tv. We're having Tommy Martin in 5-Z-N-O. I said that right. And besides Amateur Logic, Tommy also, he's a computer programmer by choice of his job. He loves computers. And he also has a photography business on the side. And loves playing all kinds of electronics and riding motorcycles.
Well, very cool. Looking forward to talking with Tommy this evening. Now, the phone lines will be open this entire show tonight on November 19th, 2014. So we look forward to your calls and jot down these numbers. Give us a call during the show. 877-SAT-GUYS. That's SAT with an S, not F with a, you know, anyway. That's 877-SAT-GUYS, 877-728-4897. Now, for international callers, or just to save us a little bit of cash, go ahead and give us a call at 347-327-9319. That's 347-327-9319.
And if you happen to miss episode Satellite Nation, you can't be here live to listen, you can always head on over to www.satelliteguys.us, head over down to the Radio Satellite Guys Radio Forum, and you'll find the archives for each show over there, so you can go there and listen to it whenever you have a chance. And also, don't forget, when you get a chance, we're on Facebook, go over to our Facebook page and like us at facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio. And follow us on Twitter at StatMattRadio.
As always, we just want to give a special thanks to the people that make this show possible to be on Satellite Guys Radio. That would be Scott Krakowski, owner of SatelliteGuys.us. If you're into technology and you just like cell phones, you like television, you like satellite, whatever technology you like, check out SatelliteGuys.us. Also want to thank Got C-Band, Dave over there. He helps us out by giving a server for the Icecast, getting us up on Galaxy 19. And then also want to thank Ralph Black, Access America. Now, he and Mike Cole have a show right after ours, and that's at 9 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday evenings, and that's called Sat Talk Radio. So stick around after our show wraps up and spend a little bit of time with Sat Talk, Ralph Black.
All right. Let's go ahead and bring in Tommy from Amateur Logic TV. His name's Tommy Martin, call sign's N5ZNO. Welcome to Satellite Nation, Tommy.
Hi, Brian and Michael. Appreciate you guys having me on your show tonight.
What's going on with you tonight?
Well, I'm actually calling in from a hotel room. I've been, got a new little gig going on with my regular job and doing traveling pretty much every week. So I'm in Dallas, Texas this evening, and Anyway, been working on a little computer project out here.
Now, did that cold snap? Did the cold snap follow you down there to Texas, Tommy?
Oh, it did. It did. You know, I live in Mississippi, and cold is kind of an uncommon thing for there. But it was pretty cold when I left, and it was actually even more cold here than at home. So it was down in the low 20s overnight, so pretty chilly.
Wow, those alligators will be will be chilling in the swamps for the next week.
Yeah, they're probably on the ice.
Well, I've had alligator on ice before, but that was at a restaurant. So,
yeah.
Tommy, is it? You know, is that part of your when you're? Are you traveling all the time with your computer programming job, or just part-time?
Well, I'm actually doing it full-time right now, every week for probably the next year, up to 2 years. We're in the middle of a big design phase, redoing a lot of things at work, and a lot of us get together in one place and collaborate on you know, all the little minute details about the software and everything. So
Okay, that makes sense. Then you usually think of a computer program as the guy sitting in a cubicle all day, you know, looking at static lines of code all day. But sounds like yours is a little more interesting.
Well, my title's actually programmer analyst, but I probably won't be doing a lot of programming over the next year. We're getting ready, like I said, putting in some new systems and some integrations and things like that. So kind of wearing a little different hat at the moment. I'll always go back to computer programming. That's kind of what I love. When I'm doing that, I feel really blessed. You know, I feel like I'm kind of getting paid to play around on the computer. I hope the people I'm working for aren't listening to that.
Now, Tommy, tell us a little bit about AmateurLogic.tv. Now, you kind of round out. We've had the other guys on the show. So tell us a little bit about Amateur Logic TV and how you got involved and kind of the role you play on that show.
Well, I'm kind of, I guess to start off, I'm sure a lot of your viewers have heard, but three of us started it out, George Thomas, Jimmy Burrell, and myself. And, you know, video was kind of just getting started on the internet. You know, there were a few audio podcasts out, but bandwidth had kind of picked up and, you know, getting decent bandwidth for the time anyway. And I guess it was George had the idea, you know, one day he's like, you know, these guys have a video podcast. We could probably do that. Y'all want to try it? So I'm like, yeah, sure. I don't have any much going on. So anyway, we kind of got started on that and never really stopped. We're all too stubborn to stop doing it. Plus, we're having way too much fun at it anyway.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as long as it's still fun and people are enjoying it, I guess we'll probably just continue on, you know, who knows how long. Hopefully, at least we're in our ninth, actually working in on our 10th year now. And, you know, I hope there's at least 10 more to go. So
getting bigger and bigger, too, getting more followers, more listeners.
Yeah, it's amazing how it's grown. You know, when we first got started, I remember we hit like 100 views. And we thought that was just amazing, like, you know, 100 people actually sat down and watched us getting up here acting like silly people, you know, and playing around with computers and cameras. You know, but you know, it's kind of grown a lot since then.
Yeah, I don't know, Michael. Sorry about that. I kind of left the airspace for you there. Now the basics of the show are, you know, you're talking about things of interest to the techies. So I noticed that you've been doing some things with pies and some other things lately. Maybe you could tell us about some of the projects you've been working on.
Yeah, I kind of tend to gravitate towards, you know, we all kind of do the things we like, and, you know, it's almost all of it's amateur radio based, or at least most hams can relate to it. I like to do things with the Raspberry Pis, Arduinos, we all do. And amateur radio stuff, you know, building antennas and things like that. My most recent project, I built an APRS station out of a Raspberry Pi and a little device called a TNC Pi. It's about $40 as a kit, you know, and we go through putting that together and setting up an iGate, you know, APRS station using the computer, the little Raspberry Pi computer. And things like that. And a lot of times I'll do things on D-Star. I'm really into D-Star. With my job and traveling a lot, it fits my lifestyle pretty good. So I can't bring an HF rig and a big antenna and all that's required for HF to the hotel. So I can bring my little DV Mega or DVAP, either one. I have both devices to the hotel room and the handy talkie. Pardon me?
You're going to start doing what George is doing so you can remote into your HF rig.
No, I'm not doing that yet, but I'm actually trying to set up for that. So I hope to do that soon. Being gone so much with my travels, I'm hoping to do some series on operating remotely here coming up since I'm going to be gone so much. Seems like a good fit, and the timing's right for it.
Yeah. perfect time in the wintertime to be in there on HF, and if you got to be traveling, you can get something set up, you know, like George's got set up there. You know, I like the way he's got that set up. That way, you know, he can disconnect the antennas remotely, too, in case a lightning storm comes up or something. That way you can sit back there, you know, and chat on the radio.
Yeah, that's a really cool device he made. I'm not sure if some of the listeners might not be aware, but he made a device when you turn the radio on. 12 volts comes out of the accessory jack on the back of the rig, and he's got a servo hooked up and an Arduino that'll actually engage the antenna and disengage it. So, and he can actually do that remotely. So he's got pretty much the ideal setup for working from a hotel or somewhere.
And then, you know, I see a little bit of similarities for some of the things, you know, us guys that do a lot of satellite. While we're on the road, we're, you know, trying to use Slingbox and trying to, you know, use IP forwarding, that sort of thing, if we're looking at low-resolution video images. But, you know, it's always a fear for a lot of the folks in the lightning land to leave that coaxial hooked up. So I could see where maybe even that project that George has been working on might have some interest for guys who Skype in and remotely watch their satellite units.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It sure would. And, you know, you could take that and a slight mod to it and put an Ethernet shield on it and actually fix where you could go in with a web browser and engage or disengage your antenna as well. That would be a pretty easy mod, what he did.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely.
So we love doing that type of project on the show. It's anything we can kind of, you know, it's sort of like the guy on the last show we did. They gave George a little device, Power Pole Buddies, I think it was called, Power Pole Pals, and little device they do, you know, those guys, they say their motto is, you know, what if I, and that's a good thing for all of us hams to do, for anybody to do, you know, use your imagination and come up with cool projects to do.
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, on your, you have projects based on Arduino and other Pi, et cetera. What are some of the projects that maybe you have going that that you can talk about for amateur radio for our listeners might be interested in?
Well, we do some equipment reviews, and I don't actually have one that's in the works right now. I've got a list of things coming up. I've got a contest idea that I'm going to be building here very shortly. That's actually going to use a Raspberry Pi, and we'll have some push buttons hooked up to the GPIO pins and play and things back, you know, interfacing it with the HF rig. That's probably the biggest one I have coming. I'm getting parts together for that one now.
Make the calling for the contest a little easier.
Yeah, exactly. Key your rig and, you know, and call CQ with your call sign and, you know, and have a way to sign off at the end and things like that just by pushing some buttons.
What are you going to base that off of? What's microcontroller?
Pardon me?
What microcontroller are you going to base that off of?
That'll actually use a Raspberry Pi for the brains of it. Everything will be based off the Pi.
Okay.
So it's, you know, it's got an audio line already out on it, and I don't have to have any extra hardware. And I was going to go with an Arduino with it, but by the time you have the Arduino and get the device for the audio and everything, then the price is going to go probably at least double on it.
Yeah, you can get sound on Arduino, but it's a square wave, and it's kind of not exactly pretty sounding, so you'd have to add extra circuits to the door. So, yeah, I should.
Right.
Shouldn't
have you said Pi. Yeah, I kind of tend to gravitate towards the Raspberry Pi. To me, that is probably one of the most amazing devices that's come out in a long time. And a lot of people try to imitate it, but they just don't really get the foothold that the Pi has. For $35, that's an amazing little device.
I'll just fire mine up and say and play on the internet, you know, and I got a big computer setting over here. It costs a whole lot more than that. It's a little slower, but I can go through most websites if I want to, you know, just read it's kind of neat to sit there and type stuff in that I'm just going to pie.
Right. And it costs so little, and you can run it off battery power, you know, at 5 volts. And the software, you can write software fairly easy for it. And, you know, the sky's pretty much the limit for it. It's a little limited on CPU power, but for most things, it's just fine.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's fine for most things. You know, people get faster and faster. But if you just want to do small projects, or you going to just browse the web or do email or whatever, you don't need all that horsepower, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got
four of them, actually, and I've got three of them that are in use pretty much all the time. And then I've got one spare one that sits there on that I can kind of remote into from the hotel and tinker around with while I'm away.
Yeah, some of the guys listen to the show, they have been, we've had a guest on a couple of times now from OuterNet, Syed Karim. And OuterNet is a way of putting internet information or data outside of the typical constraints of IP delivery. So they're using right now, they're experimenting with delivering IP data via satellite, direct to home satellite. And last week they just announced a new device that is going to be called the Lantern, which also will be using high-powered satellites like the IRDM satellites and also short-wave broadcast for data distribution. So where they are right now, the reason that I kind of bring this up is the way that most people are receiving it right now, they're using a Raspberry Pi along with a satellite USB tuner connected to it. And so a lot of the guys on our forums are using the Pi for, hooking up to the tuners, and not a lot of data requirements when all you're trying to do is extract some data from the streams. But it's pretty cool the overlap that we have within our hobbies now.
Right, yeah, exactly. And that's pretty amazing technology you're talking about there. I'll have to look that up when we get off the call this evening and give me something to kind of read later on in the hotel room here.
Yeah,
it sounds like pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, it's outernet.is. That's India Sam. So outernet.is. And they just had a fundraiser this last week, and maybe towards the end of the show we'll talk about that a little bit more. But a very successful fundraiser to introduce a new little standalone device that basically can be thrown in your backpack or be anywhere to be getting data from many different sources. A lot of the data might not be available out of the sky, but they might be able to get it through shortwave, different bands on the shortwave. And so they announced that they're going to be building in an SDR into this device. So it's going to be a very cool Swiss knife of RF.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. I'll definitely read up on that when we get finished today.
Yeah, you'll definitely want to read up on it. It's really good there. It's, like Brian said, they're going to add the SDR to it and everything. It's definitely something I think you'll be really interested in, and, you know, pass along to George and everybody. And I think they'll really be interested in looking into that if they've not already.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll definitely pass it on to them.
Well, let's get down to mention your amateur radio a little bit. How did you get started in amateur radio? We was talking about before the show, and he was asking me, let me ask you. And how'd you get started in it and all that stuff?
Well, like most of my hobbies, they go back to when I was a kid, photography as well. I remember being in junior high school back when I lived in Virginia, and a friend of mine, we were into, it's almost bad to concatenate those two letters together when you're ham, but CB, and we were going to, even back then, there was a lot of trash on the airways on the CB bands, and we wanted to get our ham tickets, so we started studying the code, and my family ended up moving us from Virginia back down to Alabama, and I just didn't follow through with it. Well, I met George I forget exactly what year it was. I guess in the late 80s, maybe. And anyway, he and Jimmy got their ticket early 90s, and they were talking to me about it and said I ought to do it. So I went and got the book at Radio Shack and studied it and got mine. So I've had my ticket since, I guess, I'd have to look on my license, but I think 1992, if I remember right. It's either 91 or 92.
Back when radio
kind of led me into a lot of things. So.
Back when Radio Shack actually used to have parts and things that we could use.
Oh yeah, that's kind of a sad subject for me. I always loved Radio Shack when I was a kid, man. Like, we'd go up there, you know, I'd deliver newspapers after school just to make an extra money, and I'd spend, you know, half of it up in Radio Shack buying, you know, different things, so walkie-talkies and hobby kits and all kind of stuff. It was a fun place back in its prime.
And then, of course, this week they announced a new partnership. I'm trying to remember what is that, Michael? The building
Little
blocks.
Bits. Is it called Little Bits? Because I can't think exactly.
Little Bits.
Little Bits. That's right. I saw that. Those are cool little devices. They Radio Shack does seem to be trying to move into more of the modern things. They got Raspberry Pis and Arduinos now. I actually try to patronize them if they have some of the things that I want. I bought a couple of Arduinos from them. I see they're starting to carry the Little Bits line of devices as well.
Yeah, it's almost like, though, that they're just trying to save their behinds right now and return back to that core. And I'm a little afraid that a little too much time has passed. And, you know, it's very cool that they're starting to put some things on the shelves. But I still think it comes down to the guy that's behind the counter. You know, if all they're going to do is ask you for your phone number.
I agree with that.
Used to be staffed by guys that, you know, knew what a capacitor was or knew what a resistor was and could actually show you the right drawer. And I think, you know, as well as carrying some of these new parts, I certainly hope that they start returning to having some people that have a little bit of knowledge that can at least give newbies some guidance as to what they can do with some of these cool devices that they're going to start carrying now.
You know, I went to the local store, you know, back near where I live, and I went in for some reed relays for a project, little 5-volt relays. And I walked in. I didn't expect anybody to know what I wanted. And the little girl behind the counter asked me, said what I need. I said, I'm looking for some 5-volt reed relays. And I started walking to the bin because I know where they are. But, and she took off ahead of me and actually went and opened the drawer and got them out. So I was kind of surprised she knew what I was talking about.
Quick, cloner.
Everywhere.
They got that on video. I have my doubts about it, but about them getting properly trained.
Yeah, like you, Tommy, I kind of grew up, you know, back in the day with I started out with a 20-in-1 kit, then got the 50, and then got the 100, and then the 150-in-1, and definitely, if it wasn't for Radio Shack, that was kind of my local feeder that brought me into RF and into electronics. If it wouldn't have been for Radio Shack, you know, Tandy Corporation, there was no other source back in those days for me.
Right. Yeah, we get into little conversations about that sometimes over on our Google Plus page, occasionally on our Facebook group as well. But and we had a conversation going recently about somebody posted a link to one of their old Space Patrol walkie-talkie commercials, which was kind of neat to go back and watch that. Plus, I remember it from when I was a kid. And then we got into the conversation about how they used to have the free battery deal where you could punch the card and get a free, free batteries. And then they had the deal where you get a free flashlight if you bought the coupon out of the paper, but you had to buy like 6 batteries to fill the flashlight up. So.
Hey, it was a door buster. It worked, didn't it?
it did, because I had about 3 of those flashlights.
It did work.
Yeah, they were good.
You know, and then they would get you in the door there, and there was so many things back there. And, you know, I certainly hope that, this isn't too late. You know, there has been some discussion on our forums about, is it a little too late? Is this kind of a knee-jerk reaction, or are we really going to see a return back to supporting the hobbyist? And I certainly hope, that we don't lose this local source. Even though we can get most everything within 1 or 2 days, if you want to pay the shipping, nothing quite like being in the middle of a project or running down to Radio Shack to get that one piece that you're missing.
Exactly. That's how I feel about it. So, I'll keep hoping. Maybe they'll get it together and stay around. But it doesn't really look too good. But there's always a little hope, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I use them for a lot for that, because get most of the parts way cheap, but that one part that you need and you thought you had or whatever, you burn it up or something, run down the Radio Shack and get it, even though you're paying for the nose for it. But I'd love that. But now, the one we had around here just shut down because lost interest. Nobody, there's selling cell phones, but everybody else in our building is selling cell phones. So they went out, and if they'd have stayed, like some of them, selling electronics and stuff, parts and things, I think they would have stayed, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah, but what surprises me is they don't really have any radio stuff. They don't even have coax cable anymore, but other than the RG59 or some 6, for television. But as far as, 50-ohm cable, they don't have any 8 or 8X or Mini 8 or, anything like that anymore, or RG58 even.
Yeah, they used to put plenty of that stuff, too, especially feeding, mainly feeding sea beers, but it worked on ham radio stuff too, but you're right, they don't have it no more. Yeah.
So you were talking that you're kind of out of amateur radio, some of the HF stuff while you're on the road, but what bands do you like to work when you're home, and tell us a little bit about maybe your setup?
Well, I've got, I don't have the best HF setup at home right now. I've been in a battle with the squirrels keeping my antenna, the rope chewed down. We've got so many squirrels in my yard, you just would not believe. Sometimes you'll come home and there'll be 8 or 10 of them in the yard, but they chew the ropes quite often to keep it down. So, but anyway, I got it back up recently. I'm using Yaesu 857D right now from my HF station. It's actually the first HF radio I bought when I got my HF privileges. And I just kind of stuck with it. But I like the 75, I get on and check in on the local nets. But I kind of like 20 and 40 meters the best. My antenna works the best on that. And my noise level's lower there. I just kind of favor those a little.
Yeah. 10 meters is my favorite band. I like the rest of them, but I love 10 meters the best.
Yeah, 10 meters is fine, especially if you can catch a good band opening.
What I like about it is kind of check band openness, what you can do. I'll rack you on the rest of them. All of them must be Jason DX or whatever, rack you them, but meters too, but I don't have 6 meters.
Yeah, imagine Michael wanting to talk. I can't even imagine that.
Yeah, 6 meters is fun, too. That radio will do 6, and my antenna will actually tune 6, but it's not really resonant on it, so its performance isn't the best, so I don't get on there very often. But I have one of those ATAS-120A Yaesu antennas on my truck that tuned 6, and I've worked all over the country, on that thing, and that's a lot of fun if you can catch the band opening on it. It just doesn't happen very often.
All right. Oh, yeah. That's for sure.
Well, I've been thinking about getting back into the amateur radio, and Michael's really been encouraging me to do it and been playing around kind of with the technology, taking some of the online tests and kind of building up my confidence and realizing, hey, I might actually make it if I don't have to do the code. But
we'll count one more person in giving you some encouragement then, because we'd like to have you in the hobby. So you had your ticket before?
I did, and then I this was way back in the 80s, and then I moved down to Haiti, the country of Haiti, and they didn't have a reciprocal. And of course, coming back from Haiti, you know, I couldn't get right back into it. And it was in my 20s. And so, you know, amateur radio wasn't the biggest thing that I was thinking about in my early 20s, if you know what I mean. So,
sure.
But definitely in a place now.
Oh, yeah.
So I've been running a couple models by Michael there. And actually, you mentioned that Yaesu. I was looking at that antenna because I'm considering the Yaesu 450D with the auto tuner in it. And it seems to be a really nice match to that that mobile antenna you were talking about.
Right. Yeah. I'm not familiar with that particular radio. I think that's their newer one, isn't it? The one with the color display?
Yeah, that's
cool. I saw one of them at Giga Parts out in Huntsville when we were out there last year. I think they were just about to release it.
Yeah, what I like about the auto tune.
Yeah,
I like the idea of having auto tune rather than having to fiddle around, especially if you're going to throw it in the truck for going mobile.
Right. So you can kind of do that with a lot of them. George put one of the Tar Heel antennas on his, a tiny Tar Heel. And he's got the tuning module for it, and it tunes it pretty nice. It's pretty nice. And then that Yaesu antenna I was talking about, it actually does the tuning. So most of the Yaesu radios, the A57D included, you can hold the button down on the mic or on the radio if you get the mic with the right button on it, so it is, and it'll actually cause the antenna to tune.
Phenomenal. Love technology.
Yeah, it's a great time to be a ham right now because things are coming out so fast and really cool stuff. You know, a lot of the ICOM stuff with the D-Star, D-Star modes built in are really cool, and then the Motorola stuff, the DMR, is really cool. It's getting kind of popular, and the C4 FM stuff, like on the Yaesu you're talking about. I don't know if it's taken off very much, yet or not. It's fairly new, so I'm not sure what's going to happen with that one. But the other two are very popular right now.
Yeah, I just love the whole idea that you can.
Stuff you can do with those digital modes.
Yeah, just love the idea that you can tie into your PC and just expand the capabilities so much.
Yeah, exactly. And what I like about the D-Star stuff is you can bring that little DVAP, little hotspot, or DV Mega, either one, when you travel and use your telephone internet hotspot and talk anywhere in the world from your handy talk. And to me, that's, I love that. It's a lot of fun. So I spend a lot of time when I'm traveling doing that.
That's what my stepdad again, too, is the D-Star. I've not got one radio to the D-Star yet. Not set anything up with D-Star yet. That's something I really want to. Eventually here in a few months to set up even something, just a small, cheap one, just to get in there and see what it's all about.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. If you ever get started in it, you probably find yourself doing it, quite a bit. It's really amazing, what you can do with just a small hand talk.
Yeah, I'm going to try that out myself because everybody's, it's getting more and more popular, and everybody's talking about it. And I'm like, okay. I did find Packy Radio back in the 90s when it got real popular. I was like, now wait a minute, I've got to get me a TNC. And by the time I had a Digipeter running and a BBS and two or three, I had a whole TNC.
Yeah, those were a lot of fun. I don't know about in your area, but that whole packet network that used to be on, I think it was 145.10 frequency, it's pretty well dead, in our area. So the only thing left with TNCs is APRS, and that's going pretty well. Not a lot of activity in our area, but, a lot of places there are.
I noticed it's not as heavy. We still got somebody. Remember who did? Still got one digipeater for packet. There's no BBS around. Uncle Graham uses it much, and I can bump it and it'll come back to your. You can just listen there so you hear it ID, and then there's an APRS you pay on the mountain over here, and it gets more activity, but it's not like it used to be, just, you know, constantly going. So it's kind of gotten out of it.
And for our listeners out there, could you guys...
Stuff is really cool technology. I think it's real underutilized, though.
Could you guys explain APRS and D-Star for our listeners, those are the listeners that are not into amateur radio, so we don't lose them with some acronyms?
Okay. APRS is the Automatic Packet Reporting System. I think that right. Tommy, is that what it stands for?
Yeah, that's right.
And essentially what you're doing is just to make it quick is kind of like you're taking your computer and hooking it, going through a modem that's designed to take your computer and instead of going to the internet or whatever, to go or a phone line or something, to go through your radio and send it over the radio signal so you can connect from computer to computer, or AMB, well, it's got BBS, and then with APRS, you set up the GPS and stuff and actually bring a map up on your computer screen and see the little dots and see people moving and see where they're at or whatever. It's just another chat. And as far as D-Star, how would you pick up D-Star?
Well, D-Star is just another mode. It's a digital communications mode. There's some data underlying on it. And it takes a special radio with the right codec chip built in it. And basically, you can communicate locally on a repeater or simplex with it, just like you would with any analog radio. The D-Star radios actually have ultra analog built in them. But the cool part about D-Star is once you learn how to program it, and it's not that hard to set the settings on it with the modern radios. But if you're in a repeater that's got a gateway hooked up to it, and almost all of them do, you can use that and link that repeater to pretty much anywhere else in the world that's got a gateway hooked up to it, and you can talk just like they're local. You can use a Raspberry Pi like we were talking about earlier, and a little device that'll make a low-cost repeater that you can put in your computer bag and take all over the country with you and use that to talk all over the world.
And so what you're talking about is like crossband?
No, it's not crossband. It's just a gateway. It's a lot of the when you use that gateway to talk, you know, the long distances, your data is actually trunked over the internet. So it turns it into digital and transmits through the internet, and it comes out at the other station that you're linked to and then, you know, goes back out over the air.
Okay. When you had said repeater, I envisioned crossband. Very cool.
Yeah, that's kind of a simplistic radio definition. I was going to say, it's kind of, you know, make it easier. It's kind of like Skyping through your radio, those sort of kind of. Your radio ties in and goes through and gets through a gateway and gets on the internet, and then you're still talking on your radio. You're, you know, physically yourself on your radio, but it's going to the internet, and it's another channel, let's say, another country or another state or across town or whatever, and it comes out on their radio once it comes back out and demodulates and back on the radio.
Now, how active is ATV?
Right. Well, in my area, it's pretty well non-existent. I don't think it's very big in the U.S. There are some people that are into it, but I know Peter, you know, one of the other co-hosts of Amateur Logic, he's really into it, and he does some segments on it every now and then on the show. I wish it were more popular because it's really fascinating to me, and I would like to get into it. I just don't think there's really anything going on in my area with it.
Yeah, and I noticed quite a bit of it in the past was analog, and I had read some articles recently about them starting to use like MPEG-2 and MPEG-4, using some satellite equipment to actually encode and decode to kind of do the digital transition on ATV.
Yeah, right. They've switched. There's still plenty of analog going on, but there's a lot of guys that are switching over to digital as well. And I will say that some of the videos that Peter has shown on the show, the quality of the images is pretty amazing on the digital as compared to the old analog stuff.
Yeah.
But then there's that digital cliff, right? You either got it beautifully or you don't got nothing.
Yeah, Right. It's just a one or a zero. It's either off or on.
Either there or it ain't.
But the digital stuff is so much fun to me. It kind of ties, you know, my computer obsession, you might almost say, if you ask my wife about it, you know, with my amateur radio stuff as well. So it's kind of the perfect fit, you know.
You ask them, anything like my obsession, if it ain't them.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that just don't really care much for the digital stuff. And that's cool, you know, the old analog stuff. Is great as well, but you know, we have a variety nowadays, which is a good thing.
That's what's nice about amateur radio. You know, there's a variety of stuff to do. There's so much stuff, and you can spend years and not, you know, do just that's all you do is do amateur radio all day long and have thousands of dollars to blow. But it's so to the high, you know, aspects to it. It's just there's something for everybody, you know. I ain't interested in talking. Well, you can type on the computer. You can do this or whatever. So much to do.
Right, yeah. And there's new things coming out all the time. It seems like every month there's something new somebody's doing that's really cool and kind of groundbreaking.
Yeah.
So that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about it being a great time to be a ham.
Oh, yeah. That's what you got to get. I'll get that ticket.
Pretty interesting. I hear that
they're
going to get some.
If your viewers are interested in it, you can start off with the technician class license if you're in the United States, and you can get the study guide. And there's plenty of online free resources as well. And it's not that hard of a test to take. And you know, taking the license lasts you 10 years, and the renewals after 10 years are free. And, you know, it's great emergency communications to have, you know, in bad weather. You know, it's really, really, in my shaded, you know, vision, it's not much reason not to do it.
Yeah, cellulars, certainly everybody depends on them way too much. But when an emergency happens, it's obvious how useful cellulars suddenly become when the cell towers are gone. It suddenly doesn't even have time anymore.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. You know, I live in Mississippi, and Hurricane Katrina came through, you know, right after, actually immediately after, probably in a week or two, that we shot the first amateur logic. And, you know, we were without power and phones in our area, and we're 150 miles from the coast. And people down on the coast, they were just devastated, and hams, you know, from all over went down there, and that was pretty much only communication they had. The whole cell system failed down there. You know, there was no way to support it. The towers were gone. The power was gone. So, you know, a good bit of that information coming in and out of there were due to, you know, amateur radio operators.
Yeah, I think any time a major emergency does come down, definitely seems to be the amateur radio operators that step in there. Not only have they practiced for it, but then they have mobile equipment and, you know, those emergency communications get through. I remember even around some times where one agency couldn't talk to another, but there was an amateur radio operator in between kind of doing the translation between two frequencies. You know, it's amazing the role that you guys play in emergencies.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned we train about it. Every June in the United States, we have what's called Field Day, and that's what everybody does. They take their gear out and hook it up out somewhere. You know, some people do it in, you know, a park or whatever, but we normally go out in the woods and where there's really not much out there, run on generator power or batteries and, you know,
yeah,
solar panels and use portable antennas and stuff. And that's kind of what that's all about, you know, emergency preparations. There's a little contesting in it too. So, you know, some people do it for the points, but the underlying theme behind it, I think, is emergency preparedness.
Oh, for sure. That's definitely what it's for. It's, and you know, some people still, you know, set their house, but they don't. That's why they're on the list of points.
Not to mention, it's a heck of a lot of fun too.
Yep, I remember as a kid there was a local high school, a private high school that I ended up going to, but one of the guys who was the math instructor there was a longtime amateur radio operator, and that's really one of the things. My uncle was an amateur radio operator, and he was in the Navy, so he had all of these electronics around. And between these two guys, they were the ones that piqued my interest in radio. And I certainly wouldn't be doing electronics like I am today if it wasn't for amateur radio, and especially the guys who this was their hobby, this was their life. And boy, I would learn so much, and went and tagged along on many field days as a kid. And for some reason, they thought that I was a great tree climber, so I would get the rope and be sent up a lot farther than those 40, 50-year-old guys wanted to climb. I would take that old, long wire and take it up to the top of a tree, no fear, as a teenager.
I bet so.
Yeah, we've got now we've kind of gotten new methods of doing it. A lot of people make a pneumatic device that you can hook an air compressor up to it and shoot a tennis ball over with your wire on it and do that. And I usually use a slingshot for mine. For the
like a modified potato like gun?
Yeah, exactly. but, we did one, I don't know if you saw it, but we did one of our field day episodes. We used a potato gun out there to put ours across. That was kind of interesting. My first experience with it, to be honest with you, it was pretty impressive. Maybe not the smartest thing, but it was impressive.
Hindsight is always 20/20, isn't it? Well, definitely. Michael, what are some of the things that you and Tommy have talked about project-wise? You guys ever touch bases over the air, or are you just mostly following him on amateurlogic.tv?
Mostly been just following him. That's about it. It's like last week was the first time I actually talked to him, but like I was telling Peter, and we're on George too. I think I told that George, but I watched so many episodes over the years. You feel more like you know them than somebody else you run across that you've heard the name, but you don't. They don't do anything on media. But Tommy is like, just a good old boy. I know him really good. Even though he don't know me.
what you see up there is what you get, and that's really us. And it's amazing to me that people keep coming back to watch it, but we're just up there having a good time and just being ourselves and trying to get people's interest in radio and projects and get them up off the couch and do something and build something and get on the air.
Well, that's what brings them in, is the projects, I think, is doing this. It's always, because that's what I like. I like to, watch the ones, let's fast forward past the yep, let's watch what they do on the project, or something. Especially when it comes down to Windows and Raspberry Pis, and that's what I think draws everybody in, really, is doing that. And then, they're just friendly and down home, and you ain't trying to be nothing special and just being yourselves, and that's what's done it for you.
So if our listeners want to catch Amateur Logic TV, of course, they can go to www.amateurlogic.tv. Now, what other platforms can they view you? If they have a Roku or other platforms, can they catch your show?
Yeah, first of all, we release new shows by the 15th of every month. Our deadline is no later than the 15th, but we usually do them a few days before that. So the new ones come out once a month, unless we do a bonus episode. If we do something fun, and want to share, which we usually do try to share, we find something fun to get into. As far as formats, we're on iTunes. We have an iPod version, we call it, but it's not just iPod, of course. It's but you can get it off iTunes. We're on the Roku. We've got our own Amateur Logic channel, and we've got a lot of direct downloads, different formats. We've got a high definition one, which is quite large. We're the only ones I know of that have a file that high quality out there to download. And then some smaller ones, Windows Media, high quality and low quality. So anyway, pretty much something for everybody. Oh yeah, we're also on YouTube. I'm not sure I could forget that one. Definitely on YouTube.
Well, very good. We just want to thank you, Tommy, for being on this evening and, piquing some of our interest in some of the technologies around amateur radio. One thing we didn't hit on, and we just have a few minutes left, you caught my attention before the show when you happened to mention that you fly quadcopters. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that's another one of my hobbies. You know, they say the difference between men and boys is the cost of their toys. And I guess maybe it's true, but I got kind of interested in, I love photography, and I saw some videos of somebody flying a drone. The drone's kind of a bad word, quadcopter, and doing some video of some different things. So I love photography, and I got one, and I'm just now getting to where I can fly it pretty decent. And I got it to go out in rural areas and take pictures of old barns and things like that. Kind of like that stuff. And so anyway, it's a lot of fun. I got it's a Phantom FC-40, and I've got a GoPro 3 Plus Black on it. And it takes really great video and pictures.
Very cool. Now, do you fly that by the video return, or do you fly that just by eyeing where it is in the sky?
I just fly mine. I keep it line of sight. Some people do that, but those things have kind of got a bad rap in the media lately. So I think I'm not sure of the legality of flying it FPV, first-person video mode. But I'm not interested in that. I mostly do it to take pictures, so I keep it where I can see it.
Right. Definitely didn't want to talk about anything illegal there, but I definitely, when you're composing your shot, and as a photographer, I'm sure you want to kind of see how the shot is looking rather than just firing off a bunch of stuff and coming back. Can you steer? Do you have robotics on the camera as well?
No, I don't have a gimbal on mine yet, although that's my next thing to put on it. I just got – the GoPro has Wi-Fi on it, so I can get the video feedback to my phone to compose my shots with. But unfortunately, the Wi-Fi is really weak on it. So this last week, I got a Wi-Fi repeater set up and configured to repeat the GoPro signal back to my phone, and now I can go out about 800 feet and still see it and see the video feedback. So I've got that where I want it. Now my next step is to put a gimbal on there. And I'll probably order one if I stay home long enough to get it ordered.
maybe the next week. Will Amazon start delivering our packages via... Yeah, right.
Man, Amazon loves my house. They drop... UPS drop stuff off there about every other week. The whole quad thing, it started out as fairly inexpensive. I got a lower end model. Well, it's like everything. I was going to try to get my feet wet, and I decided I needed to be able to fly it longer. So I bought batteries, and batteries are a little bit on the side for it. And then I got another charger for it because I had so many batteries. And it's kind of like everything else. It starts to snowball.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it does. Well, a couple of years ago down at NAB, I think it was, or maybe it was CES, I had picked up the helicopter version. And, those were the first things on the market, and I just never got the hang of that. And so now I'm looking at these quads and noticing that you can program waypoints and elevations and everything into it, so it can almost be automatic. And I'm thinking, boy, that's starting to look like it might be fun to get back into, because that helicopter thing, it taxed me. I went through more blades and more.
Yeah, the helicopters are a lot harder to fly than the quads are.
Yes.
That's a buddy of mine, so, Brian. He did the same thing. He bought a helicopter and he crashed it so many times that he just put it on the shelf and said, forget it.
Well, it's sitting in the office here, and it's looking pretty good now because I have it restored, but, you know, I have so much money into restoring it that I'm afraid to fly it.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, I bought prop guards for my quad when I ordered it. They were pretty cheap. They were like $15 more, and they've saved the blades and everything on it, I'm
pretty
sure. So eventually I'll take them off. I call them my training wheels.
Yeah. Now, down at CES, they had some incredible octocopters, and, I mean, phenomenal. You know, once we get the rules of flying down, it will be pretty interesting to see how these things are integrated.
Yeah, they come out with some really cool stuff. You know, those octocopters and things like that, the price tag is kind of rich to my blood. But, you know, if you were going to, you know, have some type of business where you did it and you wanted to lift a bigger camera, you know, that's the only way to go. So mine, I'm kind of limited to a GoPro being about as heavy as I can go with it.
Yes. Well, we want to thank you, Tommy, for being on this evening, being a guest on the Satellite Nation show. And you're welcome back to come anytime. We have just a few seconds left. So thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll catch you next time on Satellite Nation. Goodbye, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Catch you next week. I appreciate it, Tommy.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on.
Thanks to all that tuned in tonight. Join Satellite Guys Michael and Brian next Wednesday for another informative episode of Satellite Nation. And don't forget to like our page at facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio. Until next week, good night.